Welcome to the HSD podcast series. I'm your host today, Laura Franco, Vice President, Director of Post-Acute Regulatory Strategy. Today, I'm joined by Jennifer Lamb, RN, NBA, and Mock Surveyor for Life Care Services. Today, we're going to be talking about the new FTAG numbering system and the regulations that are contained in each of these FTAGs. Our goal is to help you understand each of these FTAGs so that now that the state surveyors are surveying on the new tags, that all of our listeners are in compliant. Today, we're going to be talking specifically about FTAG 603, which is free from involuntary seclusion. So welcome, Jennifer.
Thanks, Laura. Thank you for having me here. And I, as usual, I always look forward to talking about the new information and new FTAGs and how our communities can get themselves ready for the new state survey process as well.
Good, good. So before we jump in, why don't you do a quick recap on what our listeners can expect from this new podcast series?
Absolutely. Well, we will be covering one FTAG per podcast, and these are the tags that are contained under the 49 tags identified as substandard quality of care. And substandard quality of care is defined by CMS as having more than one deficiency related to participation requirements under resident behavior and facility practices, quality of life, and quality of care that constitute either immediate jeopardy to resident health and safety, a pattern of or widespread actual harm that is not immediate jeopardy, or a widespread potential for more than minimal harm, but less than immediate jeopardy with no actual harm. We're going to be using the State Operations Manual, Appendix PP, or SOM, that is the Guidance to Surveyors for Long-Term Care Facilities that became effective on November 28th, 2017. So we are using the brand new manual just as the new surveyors are. And it's our best tool for learning as much as they do and to get prepared for the state survey.
So I kind of think of the SOM as an open book. We got the answers to the test. So we just need to know what we need to do to address each one of these FTAGs.
I agree with you. Absolutely.
That's great. So why don't we go ahead and why don't you jump in with a definition of F603, free from involuntary seclusion?
Okay. F603 says that the resident has a right to be free from abuse, neglect, misappropriation of resident property, and exploitation as defined in this subpart. This includes, but is not limited to, freedom from corporal punishment, involuntary seclusion, and any physical or chemical restraint not required to treat the resident's medical symptoms. The facility must not use verbal, mental, sexual, or physical abuse, corporal punishment, or involuntary seclusion. And the intent of this tag is the resident has the right to be free from involuntary seclusion.
And involuntary seclusion is defined as separation of a resident from other residents or from his or her room or confinement to his or her room with or without roommates against the resident's will or the will of the resident's representative. Of course, there is a situation where resident behavior has escalated and the safety of another resident or other residents might be in question. Then the staff may remove the resident from the area, but the staff also has to immediately notify the physician and the resident's representative of the behaviors, and also, of course, provide adequate supervision for that resident.
Absolutely. And there have been times when removing a resident from a situation, it's necessary, but it should never be a permanent fix for behaviors. The resident needs to be further evaluated.
So what are some forms of involuntary seclusion, and why would this happen?
Well, involuntary seclusion can occur in many different ways, and oftentimes it happens because staff has grown frustrated with a resident who exhibits behaviors such as yelling, wandering, disrupting activities, or using the call light and asking for services repeatedly. Not all involuntary seclusion involves putting a resident in a room and isolating them. Other forms of involuntary seclusion could include placing objects such as furniture or wheelchairs, carts or chairs in front of the doorways or areas of entry to prevent the resident from leaving or entering another area. Staff may hold the door shut from the opposite side to prevent a resident from having access. They may place a resident in a dark office or room as a form of punishment or retaliation. Deliberately placing the call light out of the resident's reach or denying forms of communication that the resident may need to make needs known, and also placing residents in locked units that are not appropriate for the resident and denying them access codes once they've been placed in these locked units.
Well, some of our residents do live in secured neighborhoods or locked neighborhoods. So how do we make sure the resident is not considered to be in that case of involuntary seclusion?
Well, Laura, according to the SOM, the resident would not be considered to be in involuntary seclusion if all of the following criteria are met. So they have to meet all of these. And the first is the facility has identified the clinical criteria for placing a resident in the secured or locked neighborhood, and the rationale for doing so does not include staff convenience or discipline. It is not based on diagnosis alone, and it is not based on family or representative requests without adequate clinical justification. The facility involved the resident and or representative in care planning, including the decision for placement in the secure neighborhood, and the facility must provide immediate access and visitation by family, resident representatives, or other individuals to that resident who might be in a locked neighborhood.
So the important part of this is documentation has to support this. So the expectation would be that the resident's record would show documentation of any clinical criteria met for placement by the resident's physician and notes from the interdisciplinary team. The documentation has to reflect that the resident and or the resident representatives have had involvement in the decision for placement in a secured unit. The documentation has to show that placement was the least restrictive approach to the reasonable safety of the resident. There has to be, I would say, documentation by the interdisciplinary team showing the reaction of the resident, if there was any, on the placement in the secured unit, and ongoing documentation showing whether or not placement in the secured unit is still appropriate for that resident and if the resident's needs are being met.
Yes, good documentation is absolutely vital to show compliance for this particular situation. They have to have that ongoing reevaluation to just make sure that things are, this is an appropriate course of action.
Well, what about a resident who is in an isolation due to transmission-based precautions?
Well, isolation in that instance is not considered involuntary seclusion. There should be policies in place that document the type and duration of such isolation, and the facility should adopt the least restrictive isolation that is appropriate for the resident and their condition, and the resident's records should show the rationale for that isolation as well.
So basically, when a surveyor is trying to determine if there's a violation of 603, they're going to look to see if the facility separated or secluded the resident against the resident or the representative's will without clinical justification.
Yes, exactly. They are determining, usually through record review, if the resident in a secured area is there with all proper criteria met and that the facility is following proper procedure.
Now, the old tag for 603 was F223. So what's changed there?
Well, basically, F223 was very general and did not give much guidance. It was a definition only, actually. So now we have a great deal of information to help us guide our way through F603 and stay in compliance.
So in the interpretive guidelines and the SOM, it seems to me that F603 also includes some great scenarios for our communities to read up on to help them further understand 603.
Yes, I agree with that. It would be worth pulling that tag and reading what example CMS has provided that constitutes each level of severity under this tag. It's not an exhaustive list, but it does provide a little clarity and helps the communities to understand what CMS means and what they're looking for when the surveyors enter the building.
I think that's really good guidance, Jennifer. So unfortunately, that's all the time we have today. And I would like to thank all of our listeners for joining us on our continuing series of podcasts as we outline the new F tags and the regulations for the final rule. I hope you found today's discussion on F tag 603 to be beneficial and that you will continue to join us as we explore all of the 49 substantial quality of care F tags in the next few weeks. And actually, Jennifer, I'd like to thank you again for joining us, and I really look forward to our next discussion.
I look forward to it as well, Laura. Thank you very much. And next time when we talk, it'll be over F604, the right to be free from physical restraints.
Thank you, Jennifer. Another good topic. And that's all we have today. We hope to see you all soon.
Legal disclaimer. Life Care Services, LLC is not engaged in rendering legal advice. Therefore, any information provided in this podcast, although intended to be correct, is also not intended to replace or supersede the advice of your legal counsel. Also, thank you to Ben Sounds for the music provided in this podcast.